This episode is brought to you by CBS All Access. If you don't already subscribe to CBS All Access, please use our affiliate link by going to talkthroughmedia.com/CBS. Using our affiliate link gives us a little credit, which helps us to keep bringing you great content. U.S. residents only. Hello, and welcome to episode 9 of the Star Trek Lower Decks podcast. I'm Brian.
And I'm Kyle.
And I'm LT.
LT!
Yay!
How you doing?
Hello, Brian and Kyle and all the ships at sea. I'm excited to be here.
Yeah, well.
Happy to have you on board.
we thought this would be a good thing to do, have you on guest host. And we were actually thinking of like expanding this one, but because there's a new feature in Zoom that allows you to stream to Facebook and YouTube, and I couldn't get either of them to work. It just kept spinning and spinning and spinning, but we're having you on. So anyway, we'll figure it out.
All right.
Tonight, we will be covering Season 1, Episode 9 of Star Trek Lower Decks, which is titled Crisis Point. Before we get started, we have some things that, you know, we wanted to mention. We mentioned this last week, but you know, we're only 2 weeks away at this point. So if you're listening to us on the Star Trek Picard cast feed and you plan to watch Season 3 of Discovery, you may want to subscribe to the Star Trek Discovery podcast feed instead, which also has the Picard and Lower Decks episodes. When Discovery returns between those two Star Trek feeds that we have, that will be the only one that will have Discovery. Or you can subscribe to the Talk Through Media all-inclusive feed, which also contains Discovery, Picard, Lower Decks, the Rebinged DS9 podcast, The Walking Dead Talk Through, which is coming back this weekend, Yay. And Let's Talk Through. So before we get started with feedback for Crisis Point, we have some additional stuff for the last two episodes, Season 1, Episode 7, Much Ado About Boimler, and Season 1, Episode 8, Veritas. So I'm going to open Ailing Frequencies. And the first is a bit of errata.
Incorrect.
It was actually just something that I forgot. So I wanted to just include it. So it was part of what Ken said last week. He said, Mariner's not a screw-up. She's resisting promotions like Riker did. Yes, she had a traumatic event in her past. She said as much in the pilot when they took off their clothes. She's seen things with a Spock hand and, I don't know, a shocking face or something. And the thing that I forgot to mention last week, as we kind of sped right through it, was the Riker comparison, because I don't think that's a fair assessment. Yes, Riker did miss promotions, right? Like he just didn't go after them. But what we seem to know, we don't know this for sure yet, but it seems like Mariner maybe had a higher rank and has been demoted, which is not the same. And Riker never intentionally took the fall like Mariner, we've seen her do. So, you know, she's intentionally failing, it seems. Of course, this was kind of talked about this week, and some of that was addressed in a really good way. So we'll get to that, I think, in a bit. But so, yeah, that was just the one thing I wanted to mention, is that I don't think it's an accurate thing, because Riker, he was always an exemplary officer, and that's why they kept on offering him commands. He just wanted to stay where he was at. He wasn't screwing up away team missions and forgetting to bring tricorders or whatever, you know.
Well, yeah, I have to say, though, it's like it's kind of a little bit, there's got to be a little bit of a difference of, like, Riker never had the, like, he had Imazati.
Yes.
You know, like that connection, but we don't even find that out till way later. And then this time, you know, it's like there's the Mariner and her mom, you know, well, the captain. And so it's kind of like, that was kind of like immediately off the bat. It was like, oh, that's her mom and like that interaction. So I don't know if that's kind of like the difference or the play on it, but it's like, you know, Riker had a long time to get to that point. And this was like right off the bat. That's like, okay, here's the dynamic. So I don't know.
And it's a lot different with Riker because he might've had trouble with his dad, but it's not like he was serving under, you know, under right. his dad on the ship.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. It was like an outside influence of, but not directly, I'm under command.
Yeah, I would agree. And we also got for this week, we got some Twitter feedback from Adam from Cleveland. And before we get into that one, Adam was the original co-host of the Star Trek Discovery podcast with me. We used to work together in Cleveland. So if you guys, you know, go back to those original 12 episodes, I think it was Adam. So anyway, he tweeted to us. Kyle, you want to read that?
Yeah, he's like, well, definitely give it a listen. But my hot take for this, for the second straight week, they learned on the threat is not a really threat trope. Entertaining as F, which obviously is as bleep. But repeating oneself 8 episodes into the misstep for sure, the Kirk Woods Smith coming back to Trek.
Very cool. I would say that there was a bit of a, and I heard this actually mentioned on another podcast this week, that the plots between episodes 7 and 8 were kind of similar. And we've seen this a little bit with like the one with Captain Durango and the one with, I think the 6th episode, I can't think of the name right now, but, or was it actually was the 6th and the 7th and the 7th and the 8th were similar. I think we've seen that a lot. So reversing the order or changing the order a bit might've been, good. So,
yeah, well, let's agree, disagree.
All right, so now for this week's episode, season 1, episode 9, titled Crisis Point. It is written by story editor Ben Rogers. It's funny, I used to work with a Ben Rogers. Directed by Bob Suarez, who also directed season 1, episode 3, Temporal Edict, and season 1, episode 6, Terminal Provocations. The description from CBS.com is as follows. Mariner repurposes Boimler's holodeck program to cast herself as a villain in a Lower Decks-style movie. That was TV-14 with language and violence. And I didn't get a star date from it. I don't think there was one. With the air date of September 30th, because of course, on the Pacific time, it was released, you know, before midnight. But here on the East, well, everywhere else in the U.S., it was October 1st. It had a runtime of 27 minutes, 11 seconds. So far, the longest episode of Lower Decks to date. All right. So we have a guest. So we're going to go with you first, LT. What did you think of this episode?
I absolutely loved it. I keep saying this is my favorite episode so far because I've enjoyed them progressively more. Given this one the highest rating yet, a 9.9 out of 10 Borg heads.
Awesome.
Yep.
Yeah. Well, then I should go into mine. Well, that's the thing. It's like, LT, I'm like, I'm kind of... Like, I feel the same way where I feel like something's changed and I'm not sure what it is, because it was like last week I gave it a very, very big 10 and, you know, it's like, okay, I feel like my ratings are basically like very emotional, like they're emotionally driven, but I'm like, I watched this episode and before I even like started taking notes or doing anything, I just like, I'm going to watch it, whatever. And absolutely love this episode again. And so I basically was like, you know what? I'm like 10 variable fruit salads of insubordination out of 10. I like, I don't know what's going on, but I'm like, these two last episodes have been amazing and enjoyable, and I've laughed out loud. And so I'm like, they're doing something good. Let's just keep it going.
Well, there's so many different things I could use for my rating, but it's a 10. I'm going to say it is a 10 explanation of Tendi not being like an Orion slave trader. Or an Orion and slave, either way.
Yeah. Yep. And this is your good, yours is the highest rating.
So. Yes. Oh, definitely. This was the best episode by far, I would say, of the show so far. It was great from start to finish.
Yep.
All right. So we have some other ratings from our listeners.
Yep.
Kyle?
Yeah. Edwin from Arizona gave it a 9.0 Cerritos. And then he said, and the next is Aaron from Akron. And he says, this was definitely a 10 out of 10 Hollow movies.
And Wes from Minnesota says, this one was a little down compared to last week's gem of an episode. I'm really surprised, Wes.
Yeah, totally.
I think you're the only one that thought that. So he gives it 8.75 Hollow movies out of 10. All right, so let's move on to our yeses.
Yes.
Edwin from Arizona says yes to Hollow movie. So you like the Hollow movie. I did too.
Yep. And Aaron from Akron said, no, it's a movie. You can beam whatever you can do, all sorts of beaming stuff in a movie. which was Rutherford having his little moment with the... what's his face? But like, this was the thing. He's like, he posted this in the Facebook group. So I wasn't sure if this is like, I just put it into the S. He was like, OMF biscuits. Did they really have a TMP style intro and warp out?
I believe that was a yes.
Yeah. I pretty much agreed.
Yeah. It was that way. It definitely was. And of course they had the TMP style, shuttle around the starship an inexplicably long time. Our final four listeners that gave in their feedback. Wes from Minnesota says, all of the references to all of the movies. I saw references to Generations, Search for Spock, Star Trek Beyond, Star Trek 2009, and even the Undiscovered Country, and even the Final Frontier. Boimler falling off a cliff to Kirk in that movie. Also, Mariner saying what every Starfleet officer has wanted to say since TOS. Screw the Prime Directive. Yeah, and I think there were some other things. Of course, we had that Star Trek V reference last week, so maybe they didn't need to reference that. But I know I thought I saw, like, the Borg would have referenced First Contact, right?
Yeah. Yeah, yeah, and
so there's that, and there were a few other references there. I know Wrath of Khan was in there as well. I don't know about the whales. I don't know if Star Trek IV was in there, but it probably was. All right, so that's it for our listeners, of course, but LT is here, so we'll let him give his own yeses, because he's got quite a few.
All right. I loved it when they went to the credit sequence on the holodeck, mainly because they kept, you know, bashing Boimler on the head as the letters came zooming by.
Yeah.
The subtle part of it, that they changed the screen aspect, that it actually changed to like widescreen, like this was a movie. I mean, you have to watch it, but it's very subtle.
I noticed it. Yeah. I know.
And
mad props to the guy that writes the music. Holy cow, this was incredible that when the credits came up, you had the theme and it was the swelling theme as the credits went by. Caught myself laughing really hard when Mariner and Boimler were talking during the credits. And and she was going, well, I was going to replace you. I'm going to do a Zahn.
Yes. Yes, the Zahn reference was brilliant, actually. That is an extremely deep cut, the deepest deep cut that they could ever give.
Oh, yeah.
That's so funny, though, because that is a character from Star Trek, what was it called? Star Trek Phase 2, who was going to replace Spock, and he was going to be played by, I think his name is David Gautreaux or something like that.
Yep.
And it's actually, if you go back to Larry Nemechek's The Trek Files, he was on for like two or three episodes talking about that character. And it was really interesting. I recommend going back to check that if you're interested. But yeah, so that when they were going to bring back Star Trek in the, you know, late 70s, before they decided to make the motion picture, Spock wasn't coming back. Like, Leonard Nimoy didn't want to do it. They were having trouble getting him to sign up. So eventually they just said, screw it. And they hired this actor, David Gautreaux, and he was going to be Zahn. And he had a much different, you know, he had like a 70s haircut, put it this way, you know, like the wave and stuff like that. He did not have the bowl cut that Spock had. But it didn't go that way. So, but yeah, I love that reference. Very, very, very deep cut reference. So, yeah, I don't think they could have found a deeper cut to go with.
When you were talking about the shuttle ride around the ship, that again, the music was the big grandiose, very, very TMP. The looks on the crew's faces through the window, had to laugh because Billups was crying.
Yes, I noticed that.
I know.
And if you look, there was one shot when they're looking down into the shuttle. If you look at their expressions, it was pretty much a mirror image of one of the early Kirk era movies when the crew was in the shuttle flying by.
Yeah,
you could look at the expressions on their face, and I'm like, somebody was really paying attention. I was cackling madly when they got onto the bridge after the flyby, and they had all the lens flares.
Yes.
And the other sort of JJ homage was when they went to warp, the way they did the cut, and you see the little sparks between the nacelles. And the ship stretched slightly and zoomed off. I'm going, well, let's just hit all the movies. And Shimbo. It's like, well, this is going to be you, Boimler.
Yeah.
You know, hi, I'm Shimbo.
I know.
Shimbo, yes.
It's too funny. And the other part that I really loved is this episode had so many good quotes in it. This is probably the most quotable episode. Absolutely died every time that you had when Mariner said, this is the 80s. We don't have psychological problems.
Yeah, I know. That was brilliant.
You know, Ransom with his, this isn't my first overpowered space warlord.
Awesome.
And your vague DS9 cut when Shax had the big blaster on the bar.
Oh, yeah.
When you get to hell, tell the Power 8 that Shax sent you special delivery straight from Bajor.
Yeah.
And of course, I already mentioned it. There's going to be random Borg heads in meetings now.
Yeah. I was kind of like, oh my gosh. I'm like, how do you get a Borg's head? Like, how did that even come into picture? But obviously it's a holodeck. She can be like, I'm doing whatever. And of course I had a force field and I was like, perfect.
And it's a movie.
Right.
It's like the magic beamy things.
Yeah. It was so funny.
Or I had also when, Captain Freeman and, Vindicta were fighting on the bridge, and he said, you've never loved me. It's like, I'm overflowing with love and affection.
Yeah,
I mean, like I said, it was just way too many yeses.
Yes.
Just absolutely had a blast.
Agreed.
And well, I guess it's my one thing from The Incredibles, when her cape gets stuck in the door. It's like stupid capes.
Oh yeah. Yeah, definitely. All right, Kyle, what about you?
Yeah, like I just have to preface this. So it's like I watched this as much as I could, but this week was very, very, so I'm like, I had a lot of like, I wish I could have watched this so many times more than I could tonight. But at the same time though, it's like, this was such an enjoyable episode, just even from the first watch. And then I got a second watch in, but like, I don't know. It was just, I put my one comment. It was like, okay, lens flares. Okay. We've all seen, you know, like the new Treks and the new, what's the J.J. Abrams. Yeah. Okay.
It goes by many names.
Yes, I know.
But the main thing is that a lot of people don't like it, but I don't mind it at all.
No, but I was just like, okay, I'm like, you can cut this or edit this or whatever. It's like the J.J. Abrams version of like Star Trek. And it was like, of course, the lens flare. So it was like, we had the whole like watching, you know, like the shuttle going around all like the ship and everybody being all like excited and this and that. It's like, we've seen that before. Pretty much they do that. Like we saw that in Generations. We saw it in, or maybe not Generations, but when Enterprise D or E, like, you know, it's like, oh, here's the new ship. And like, they take their time, this and that. So, and we've seen it in, Galaxy Quest. It's like kind of the trope. It's like, oh, here's the ship and we're gonna like go around this and that, but it lasted so long. And then once they get in there, it's like, okay. And then they do the whole like, oh, we're going to warp, and then immediately it was like, next scene, lens flares. So I don't know, I love that. It's just like, it was hilarious. And the Da Vinci skeet shooting,
yeah.
Like, of course, Da Vinci is like going like, yeah, that's just a total like, especially this is a holodeck episode. It was just like, oh, yeah, it's like Da Vinci, like whoever it could have been, like anybody else. But we know Da Vinci from Voyager and like whatever. And it's like him like playing into that whole scene. I don't know. I thought that was hilarious. Then the only other thing was just like, you know, it's like, the fact that this was all based on like, okay, like we're kind of like going into the movie, like all our Star Trek movies, everything we understand, but it's like the whole scene, like the whole, like the credits flying over and this and that. I mean, wasn't that Generations, or was that basically it was the TNG movies. But we always saw all that stuff, but it was hilarious to seeing, it's like, oh, here, we're going to do a movie. We're doing this thing. And it's like, that's the scene that we see. And then of course it's a flying and they're all ducking, but Boimler is the one that gets hit. And I don't know. It was such a fun play on all of our Star Trek experiences, especially with the movies and this and that, because it's like, what was it? It was Generations, where we had the episode, or like they had the credits where it's like the bottle of, you know, whatever it was.
Dom Perignon, I think. Or was it, yeah, Chateau Picard? I don't know.
Or maybe it's Chateau Picard. I mean, I have to go back. But it was basically, yeah, it's like we had the whole series where it's like, oh, this wine bottle's floating and this and that. All the credits come through and this and that. Star Trek The Undiscovered Country was the one that had basically this kind of like title sequence. And, you know, it was just fun to see that, because it's like you immediately recognized it. And then it was like watching them be like, oh no, it's like the fact that they were ducking the whole entire time was hilarious. Like the whole entire time, they're like, oh, we're in a movie. Let's do this. Let's have fun. And it's like everybody ducks, but like, boy, like, why would you have a holodeck why would, if you have the holodeck, why would that be a thing? Like, why would you worry about these like letters coming by and like they would hit you in the head? It's like, it shouldn't even have been that way. So I don't know. I just, clever, funny, awesome, totally enjoyable. They basically tapped into everybody's like, you know, experiences with our movie, you know, like just our nostalgia, like all that stuff. And right from the beginning. So it's like, I will say later on, it kind of got a little weird, but it's like beginning was awesome.
Okay. Not really sure. I'm curious by that last statement, but there were a bunch of little things that I got a kick out of in this episode. I mean, I love this episode, and unfortunately my notes are sucky for the second week in a row. And unfortunately, unlike last time where I watched it, I think five and a half times before we recorded, this time I only was able to watch it twice, and which is weird. I don't know what happens when you actually take days off and you end up with less time to do these kind of things than more time. But in any case, there's a few little things. When Mariner asks what lizards like to do, and the lizard responds, bask. Yeah. I just got a kick out of that. That was not the answer I was expecting. And then the rat-like species, which look very similar to the Antikins, which I'll talk about later. He says, you know, can the replicators make nutrient pellets, which is like similar to what, you know, a rat or mouse might eat?
Yeah.
And she's like, yes. And then, of course,
and that's when it ended too. It's like, yes. And it's like, cut to black.
Yeah. And then this is the 80s thing, which I think already got mentioned. I loved the reference of the Orions, because that was something I brought up previous weeks about how the Orions, you know, they're supposed to be, you know, slave owners, or, you know, and also that they are like in some ways worse than the Ferengi, I think. But Tendi says, you know, some of us haven't been pirates for like 5 years.
Mm-hmm.
So anyway, I thought that was cool. I enjoyed Mariner facing off with herself. I think this has been done more than once, like in the Enemy Within, I think, that TOS episode, Second Chances, even Time Squared from TNG. That was a second season episode with Picard beats Picard from 6 Hours in the Future. There's that, and there were a lot of great things about this episode. I just thought that it was brilliant. We still don't know, like, what, you know, because we've suspected that something happened with Mariner to make her like this, but it seems like it may only be an overbearing mother that's caused this. But I don't know. I still tend to think that something happened to make her misbehave, because, like, we see that thing from the Keto. Thank you. And she was not rolling up her sleeves. So makes me think that, you know, that we're going to see that eventually, find out what happened. Maybe, you know, hopefully next week. I also had one thing that I was going to mention, but I'm going to hold off because LT's got it. So I'll let him say it. All right. So we actually do have a few no's in here. So let's go to the no's.
No!
All right. Erin from Akron says, Mariner is effed in the head. I would have to agree.
She kind of is. Yeah.
And then West from Minnesota said, like, Bill Boimler kissing butt. Nope. Not going to work.
I mean, we have seen him kiss a lot of butt, though.
Yeah.
So I don't know if I agree with that, Wes, because he is.
Like, it's kind of like and it's in his nature. And it's like, yeah, he's going to always do that. So,
and I just remembered one of my yeses that I didn't say. So I thought it was funny that at the end, he goes in and he basically screams and yells out some crazy stuff in his interview. You know, first says, Mariner is hot, and then says, nasty. And then he runs out screaming, and the captain says that he didn't prepare for the interview at all. What a waste or something, or, but it made me think maybe this is the beginning of Lazy Boimler.
Yeah.
Which we saw that statue of him later on. So.
Oh, the, yeah.
Yeah. All right, Kyle, you have a no, actually.
Yeah. I mean, this is kind of like picky, whatever, but I thought it was like Shaq's Bajoran earring when like Mariner blew him up with the Borg head. It was just like his ear was still on the earring. And then, of course, Tendi was just like, oh, no, is this like a really like bad thing to have, like religious implications? I don't know. I was like, I enjoyed all the killing in this episode because it was just like very like you would think on a holotech thing. But I just kind of thought if I was going to put any kind of no, it's like literally that's why I put this, because like, oh, if I'm going to pick anything, it's like, ah. I thought that was a little bit too on the nose and too just like, oh gosh, that's really, really, really bad. I didn't quite like it. You know, like, it's like, I don't want to have to think about like, oh, I got to like dig deep to like find whatever semblance or whatever. So like, no, dude, it's like, it's a Bajoran. You got his earring and you're like, hey, here's his earring and it's got his ear on it. That's just like so bad.
Yeah.
So yeah. That was basically it. Enjoyed the rest of the killings, but you know, I was like, that was just, felt like it was like, that was a little too much. Kira would not be happy. She would be hunting Boilermer down right now.
And it wasn't all of his ear. It was just a piece of his ear.
I know. That was what was so horrible about it.
Yeah. Well, I have one no, and that is this. I did not appreciate Jet throwing Boimler down a cliff. I thought that that was very un-Starfleet, and I don't think that that would actually happen. So that was the one negative that I have to say of this whole episode. I did not think that that was appropriate. I don't think that a Starfleet officer, okay, so he tried to poison the captain with chocolate chip cookies, which is stupid, but he wouldn't throw the guy down a cliff. Come on, that's crazy. Any of you guys disagree with that?
Yeah. Even though we did get our Starbase 80 voice in the background.
Yeah.
Doing the, hell yeah, Jet. But, you know, the assassin tackle and the, when she was going, that's the way to tackle an assassin, Jet. Mm-hmm. And, you know, he apparently was doing the right kind of kiss up because Boimler was like, well, I want to be the man.
Yeah, that's very true. And I agree with all of that. The part that I don't agree with is Jet wouldn't turn around and throw him down a cliff. That's what I mean. That's not a very Starfleet thing to do.
No, you're not going to, especially after you've already survived the ship crash. And yeah, let's toss a surviving crewman over a cliff.
Yeah, exactly. All right, so that's it for our nose. We only got one not good enough, so here we go.
Not good enough, damn it, not good enough.
Wes from Minnesota, the whole movie thing. More, please. Well, a whole movie would work. I had a whole thing, you know, more, please. Like the whole Billups Rutherford thing. I thought that was goofy. And it was kind of like a reference to, I thought that there could be more to that. And I wondered why he wouldn't be willing to tell him that to his face. But I did get a kick out of the fact that, you know, he's like, he's such a badass. We see Billups there slurping his soup.
And he looked very like, he was like almost like distraught and like, oh my gosh, like he's having a like a horrible bad day. But like, obviously you can have whatever you want on the holodeck and do whatever you want and like have like this and that. But it's like when it was actually in reality, it's like Billups looked like he was just like, I'm not having a good day today. I look horrible. And I'm like, whatever, you know, it's this and that, but I don't know. It was fun to see that though, but again, I think I agree with you on the not good enough, because I'm like, I would have liked to seen that transition into real life, not just the holodeck.
All right, so that's it for our not good enoughs this week. All right, so it's time for our feedback section, and we're going to open hailing frequencies again. Okay, so our first is, we got two relatively short voicemails this week. The first voicemail is from Jeff, X-Force 11.
Hello, Star Trek fans. It's Jeff, X-Force 11, with my feedback about STLD Crisis Point. I love all of the movie references in this episode. I can't wait to hear y'all dig into where they're all from, but it was just fun to see them. And I like Mariner's therapy as it was via the holodeck. We've seen that before where people use the holodeck for therapy, and I think it gave her good insight. However, now that Boimler knows that she is the captain's daughter, things are going to be definitely more complicated. All right, those are my thoughts. X-Force 11 is out.
Well, thank you so much, Jeff, X-Force 11, for your voicemail. As always, a perfect 9 for 9 this season of Lord X. So, thank you so much. Yes, the intrigue of the secret of who Mariner, you know, the fact that she is Captain Freeman's daughter.
Yeah.
I think that it's going to be interesting to see where that goes next week.
Yeah. Well, and I like to always say, it's like, yes, we've seen the holodeck being used for therapy. Like, it's been in every season, every, like, you know, like every incarnation of Star Trek. The holodeck has always been a, you know, like a kind of like a how to like give off steam, or like, you know, like try to find yourself, or like, you know, like have deep thoughts, or like whatever. It's like we saw it in Voyager with, you know, Janeway and Da Vinci, which we saw in this episode. You know, it's like they use the holodeck to be able to kind of like try to figure things out, or like maybe see new things or whatever. I mean, the Doctor in Voyager obviously like used it to being able to try to find out things and this and that. Next Generation, we've seen that time and time again, just so like how to like, you know, they always use the holodeck as like a way to be able to do that. So seeing it this way was really interesting and also fun, because it's like, that's what we know. But to see Mariner do it in such a very violent way, like that was kind of like, oh, her therapy is like, hey, I just want to like kill everybody and have no like repercussions. And I can like play my fantasy out to be like, I'm going to get my mom, which, you know, I felt like Boimler already knew that, but maybe, I guess he didn't. Maybe I missed that. I thought he knew, or something was said that he, like, he might have known, but maybe, you know, maybe I didn't. Maybe I missed that later on.
I don't think he suspected.
Yeah, that's, I
you know,
I obviously missed something then, because it's, I thought there was something in previous episodes. It was like he saw that inner exchange with her and mom, and like, yeah, or I mean, I guess in the end, I'm like, I'm either missed it or whatever. I thought that wasn't really a secret, but in the end, though, well, I think the whole,
now.
Yeah, no, totally. But it's just like, I thought in the end, though, it's just the fact, it was the fact that like, this is Mariner's way to like therapy herself or whatever, and it was so violent, it was so like horrible and evil, like whatever, like that, you were like, wait, no, this is not what you're supposed to be using the holodeck for. But it makes me think, it's like, well, how many other Starfleets like use this to like kill their boss, and like, hey, I had a really bad day today, I'm going to go in the holodeck and like, murder everybody in the whole freaking ship. So I don't know,
somebody has a Harry Mudd discovery program where they get a time belt. when you were talking about working things out, I was getting ready to say, oh yeah, and you can work on your warp drive and fall in love with Leia Brahms.
Yep. Well, anyway, I don't know. I wish that I had access to a holodeck because I know it would help me.
Well, the thing about Mariner is that when her holographic double showed up, and you know she had already said, "You're reading my personal you're reading my personal logs. It's not cool, man."
Yeah,
it's like she didn't expect to see herself.
Yeah.
No, I thought that was like actually the fun little surprise of all the whole entire episode. It was like, okay, she's the one in control of this whole like ordeal. She changed Boimler's whole program. She's like, hey, I'm doing a movie and she's just to like go out and be like, I'm shooting, like basically living her dream, whatever it was. She changed everything. But in the end, it was about like, oh, well, if this is all based on everybody's private logs and all this other stuff, that of course she would be involved in that. And then it's like, oh, and then her double or the holographic version of her basically kind of kicked her ass. And so it was like, yeah, it's like you basically just got taught a story about your own self on a holographic version of it and being like, that's what she's going to learn from. It's like, oh yeah, I was wrong. I shouldn't have done this. And she took it to the extreme, had to be basically put in check and like come back down to be like, oh yes, I should be caring about like my friends and all this other stuff. I don't know. I'm trying to be too like philosophical about this. And I'm just like, it's literally
you have posed a good question though. If we know there was a holographic Mariner, why didn't we see a holographic Tandy or a holographic Rutherford?
Yeah, right. It's like they were in the program. They never had their counterparts because they were playing their roles. This is
maybe they got sucked out a hull breach. They were somewhere else in the ship.
Yeah. Well, isn't this how usually like the holodeck like mess ups or like, you know, like the quirks, it's just like, oh yeah, it's like it's not about everybody else, it's whoever's like in it. And it's like, that was the one quirk that was like, oh, maybe the holodeck was just like, hey, got to teach you a lesson. Like you have to, like, this is, I don't know. It's just, I'm trying to dig too deep. It was just the fact that it's like, of course it was her program, her chain. Like, you know, she was the one that was like trying to instigate all this and like bring everybody involved, but in the end it was just like it was her changing of the program, reflecting on her own thing and like whatever. And it's just like, it's like Barkley, you know, Barkley's always had a holodeck issue or it's like something came around, whatever.
Yeah, like Barkley and his Voyager simulation where he was hanging out with everybody on the Voyager and they were all his buddies.
Right. No, I got a little bit of that out of this too, but trying to like come around to like, why was it that Mariner was the only one that was like basically doubled? Everybody else seemed fine. And it was, you know, not a problem, but.
Well, she did write her corrections in like 3 minutes. So maybe she didn't think to delete herself.
Well, and how do you get a Borg head? Who would have thought of that?
I wondered that myself. Why was it an exploding Borg head, not just a Borg head?
And then, it's like, why did Shax have like the biggest gun I've ever seen in my entire life that like basically was the size of that door?
He's like, the chief of security.
So, of course, well, and he's the also Bajoran. So he would, of course, have like he would have turned a Cardassian's like tricorder into like, oh yeah, this is gonna be like, this will make the biggest explosion because I put
he's a large angry man and he deserves a large angry gun.
Yes. Yep. I loved it though. I thought that was gun. I was like, oh my gosh, of course. I'm like, I want that gun.
All right. We have our second voicemail, and this is a short one. So this is from Fred from the Netherlands.
Hello, Brian and Kyle. This is Fred from the Netherlands with some feedback for Star Trek Lower Decks Season 1, Episode 9. I don't need therapy. Okay, that was all for now. Greetings, all the best, Fred from the Netherlands.
That's it.
I wanted to use that in beginning scene somewhere, like either my yes or like whatever, but I just went down the line. But yeah, that was kind of a funny.
I think we have a new sound effect.
I could agree. We could use that for sure.
Well, anyway. Thank you so much, Fred, for your voicemail and new sound effect that you've contributed to us.
You have to use that in Discovery. You have to use it in Discovery.
Yeah. Or whenever I start talking about, difficulties I've had or whatever.
Thank you, Fred. That was awesome.
I have to say, though, I wish that, unfortunately, the VR that we have in 2020 is not up to snuff of the holodeck. All right, moving on. Now is time for our spot, the references section, because we don't have any other feedback. I think we got a little bit here and there that got like interspersed in the ratings or whatever, but now for the spot, the references. Well, there were so many references, I have to go to an outside source for most of them. But there were some things that I did write down. I mentioned the Antikins. There was an episode called Lonely Among Us from season one of The Next Generation. And these aliens that we see, they are not referenced as the Antikins, but they looked a lot like the Antikins. So they may be, they may not be. They had a thing where they would eat like sentient species because they wanted to eat the Sele, right? In that one episode. So
yeah, that's right.
Yeah, yeah. And there is somewhat of a resemblance to the Sele, but not quite. The TNG aliens were a little more elaborate in their makeup, so they definitely weren't the Sele, but, and then for that matter, we don't know if they're the Antikins, but.
But we are delicious.
Yes.
I thought that was funny, too, the whole thing of, you're a sentient being, you shouldn't be eaten. Yes, but we are delicious. And I agree with you about your Antikins.
Yes. They definitely did look like it.
Yeah.
Anyway, moving on. Da Vinci may also be a nod to a script called Star Trek Renaissance. In that script, Data would have traveled back in time to become Da Vinci's apprentice. And supposedly that was a script that, I don't know if it was rejected or whatever, but they ended up, not going with that, and instead they went with the Borg in First Contact. So I don't know too much about that one, but that is an extremely deep cut. And I guess they figured, they like Da Vinci as a character, so they used him in Voyager. So the opening credits were like Star Trek II, The Wrath of Khan, with the TNG style font, and they were also similar to Superman's credits from the 1978 Christopher Reeve movie. So, and also the ending credits, I believe, were just like Star Trek VI with the signatures at the end.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So there was some quoting of Shakespeare in the case of Mariner was quoting The Tempest. And even Ransom asks, is she quoting The Tempest? And Christopher Plummer quoted Shakespeare in The Undiscovered Country, but there was some for The Tempest. The Cry Havoc, that is Julius Caesar. Mm-hmm. And Picard also quoted The Tempest during his during Data's death in the season finale of Star Trek Picard. I guess the super destructive phaser that was used by Vindicta or Mariner, whatever, similar to what TNG, the As Loud as a Whisper, those aliens that used that, they were, you know, they kind of obliterated the person. You mentioned LT, the Paw Wraiths. Yeah, that was one thing. I talked about the Orions. Of course, we've seen the Orions here and there. Of course, in the cage, Whom Gods Destroy from TOS as well. We also see them in the Pirates of Orion, a TAS episode. And then in the Enterprise episode Bound, that the whole thing about that certain Orion slaves are actually manipulating their masters to create an illusion of who has the real power. So, and then we see them in 2009, Kirk basically spends the night with Rochelle Nichols, who was playing Uhura's roommate, Gallia, who was an Orion. And, of course, the escape artists we see, the short track, we see the Orions. So lots of Orions. But I got a kick out of course, how they haven't been pirates for over 5 years. So I wonder if that had something to do with the Dominion War or something. Maybe there were reforms that came out of that, or I don't know.
I was going less meta than that. So how long has Tendi been in Starfleet Academy and posted to a ship? Maybe 5 years.
Yeah. Probably. Maybe she's the first non-pirate. You know? There was also "Get off my mom, you bitch." it's a line from Alien, where Ripley says, "Get away from her, you bitch." There is Toby Targ. So Mariner dressed as Toby the Targ when she was a kid for Halloween. That is reference to Toby the Targ from Voyager. So Polana had a plush toy called Toby the Targ. There was a scene with a rickety catwalk, which we've seen in a few places, like, again, the Second Chances and the scene where Kirk dies, spoiler, 46 years ago. There was a thing about where Boimler said something like, "Do you like turtlenecks or just standard uniforms?" And I guess that was a reference to how they kept switching between turtlenecks and standard uniforms during the TNG era after they got rid of the onesie. You know, Mariner is buried in rocks. It's also a Star Trek Generations thing. Vindicta's return is similar to Wrath of Khan, I guess. All right, so now it's time for our other notes. So, LT, why don't you start? Or are you there, LT? Okay.
I think this was the best episode so far. I mean, I really just absolutely enjoyed this. And you can tell by what I had said that, you know, this had a lot of buildup. The big thing now is, so our boy Bradward knows.
Yes.
Bradward knows the secret. And if you notice something about Boimler, that when he's talking to the other Lower Deckers, he's fairly cogent, fairly smooth. You know, he can kind of be a take charge guy, but you get him in front of anybody with more than one pip and he goes all to pieces.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, exactly.
And the expression. The expression they put on his face whenever the holodeck door opened and Mariner standing there, it was almost as good as your evasive pattern 88. And that's the thing, man. They've really done such a good job overall. And I just wonder where I just hope we get the payoff.
Mm-hmm.
If I've got any concern about this episode is, are they going to pay off all the things that they've sort of laid in place and still leave us with a hook for later?
Yeah. I mean, I tend to think that they will. I've been pretty happy with what they've done so far. And, you know, I think we've all said it, the show has been getting better and better and better as it's gone on. And, you know, but you're right that, in fact, you know, like you gave them two tens in a row, Kyle, right? Mm-hmm. So, you know, now if they don't deliver a third 10, it's right. going to be kind of disappointing, you know?
Yeah.
So hopefully they're not going to disappoint, but it is pretty unusual for them to, you know, come on such a high note. Like the last three episodes have been phenomenal. I'd say the last, well, it's been good all around. The second half, especially, I think has been outstanding.
Yeah.
So anyway, Kyle, what about you? What do you have for notes?
I just have to go on off that too. It's like, I did say that, you know, like there seems to be like, okay, there's the Boimler and Mariner, like, you know, exchange that, like, yeah, something's going to happen to where it's like, they're going to be basically, well, I don't know, best friends, or like, we're going to see like the end of the season, that like they're pushing this towards, you know, like some kind of interaction, friendship, you know, talked about. It's like, oh, like Boimler's going to be number one, or no, Mariner's going to be the number one. They're going to be captains, or, you know, like something down the line, like their friendship is building and building and building. And I, you know, I said that earlier was like, yeah, that's, I feel like that's where this is going.
Yeah.
To being like, you know, some kind of interaction between those two, and it's going to lead to this thing, whatever. But it's like the beginning of the episode, or the beginning of the season, it was kind of like, there was just this kind of, like, I don't know what it was. It was like, you know, I enjoyed it, but I wasn't thrilled about it. I was just kind of like, oh yeah, I'm here. I even said it. I was like, yeah, if it wasn't my job to do this, then I would probably never watch this.
Yeah, that's probably a good thing to bring up now. So what do you think now?
I feel like these last two episodes, and I think I actually was like messaging you this, where it's just like, what the hell did I just watch right now? Because it was like, this was not what we were watching the last like 3 weeks ago. It was like, this has gone a whole different thing. And I don't know if like this is where they were going for, or like maybe these should have been the first episodes that we saw, because if I saw these, I would have been like, oh my gosh, I'm going to sing her praises from day one.
I honestly don't think that this is a question that these are the episodes that they should have started with. I think that these are the kind of episodes that you're able to finish with, because you have to build things up. And, you know, unfortunately, I wouldn't say that things were a rough start, but it's typical for a show to have to get several episodes under their belt before they can find their footing. And I think in the case of this show, I think that's exactly what it was. They had to find their footing. And I think the show has benefited from, as the season's gone on, we've, you know, developed the characters. I think it's gotten better and better. And this is a great, if they nail the finish next week and it's as good as this past week was or close, I think we are going to have some great shows for season two. And, you know, I, for one, can't wait for that. And I don't know where they are in doing season two, but, you know, we may end up after Discovery, this may be our next show that we see season two of. So, because I don't think they've started shooting Picard yet, as far as I know.
Yeah. As far as I know either. Yeah. They haven't done that. Well, then I have to give them props, because it's like they've done within just 9 episodes what it took them 3 seasons of Discovery.
Yeah.
Three seasons of Deep Space Nine, 3 seasons of like The Next Generation, 3 seasons of like whatever Star Trek. There's always that, like, you have to go through it and get there. And then it's like, oh yeah, I remember, like, season 3 is where it all begins, and like everybody's on board in that. And it's like, they fleshed out all the problems. Well, then they just did that in like literally like 9 episodes.
Yeah.
Cause that's what I feel like. It was like the beginning. I remember that first episode, I texted you and I watched it, and I was just like, Yeah, did I like I this is like I am so not on board. Yep. And I was like, you know, like I had to come up with the, like, oh yeah, it's like I was drinking a little too much Romulan ale, but it was just like I did not enjoy it at all.
Yeah.
And then episode 2 and 3, I was kind of like, yeah, okay, there were some funny things. But I just, these last two episodes were, I think, however I wanted to, like, you want to describe it, this and that. I'm like, I've these two last episodes were like the only time I've ever laughed out loud. Actually, like watching it and just enjoy, I was just like, oh my gosh, this is like amazing, this and that. And if they were able to do that in that sense, I'm like, okay, then they, I don't know, you know, in this pandemic that we're in, how, you know, like everything started, like how they're coming off on this, they better finish, because if it's not as good as it has been, then yeah, then it'll be like, okay, well, they'll be, these two episodes are going to be like basically my gold star episodes, and the rest of it, if they can't finish this, I'll still watch and still do stuff, you know, still podcast or whatever. But I'm like, I just have to say, I'm like, I felt like this was like a totally different show than from the beginning.
Yeah. I'll 100% agree with that, that we've all said that it takes Star Trek time to get going. Mm-hmm. And the criticism of Discovery, that it had a very painful birthing process, but this is a Trek series that's come after two new series that have been successful. And so their learning curve, their birthing pains were hopefully just two episodes short. Mm-hmm. And I have to agree with you. They've gotten so good over the last two or three episodes. Now, being the cynic that I am, I'm just hoping they can stick the landing.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Same here. I agree.
And the good part is at least with all the, you know, the COVID stuff going on, you're not in the same production constraints that Picard is. Yeah. Or that Discovery has been, that hopefully we will get the second series or the second season a little sooner. And again, I'm really hoping if they can stick the landing with that last episode, then that'll give them, in my mind, a boost. Because once somebody starts watching this, if they haven't been watching it already, you get them in there and they binge it. Because mm-hmm.
Yeah.
What? It's how many episodes is going to be? 8? 9? No. It's how many's in the series the season?
10.
This is 10. 10? Yeah, 10.
So you figure that's only like 5 hours of TV. That is infinitely long night bingeable.
Right. Yeah.
So I'm pretty hopeful. I think that if you get somebody that hasn't watched it, somebody who was saying, well, yeah, it's a cartoon,
Ruthie,
get them. I just was throwing it out there, but you get somebody who wasn't really down with the idea, that, like I said, 5 hours, you can binge it all.
Yep.
And, mm-hmm. and I'm even saying
less.
The last three have just been so good.
Yep.
Yeah. Yep.
Yep.
Agreed.
I mean, it's even past my expectations, because you guys know I've kind of been the Russian judge for a lot of these rating. And, you know, I don't think I've ever given a 10.
You came close this week.
Yeah. But, I'm not one to just say, oh, it's great. Yeah. You know, but it's really been hard.
Yeah,
it's really been hard, because I want to be as happy and squish and saying, you know, this is super great. But it's kind of what Kyle was saying. You have what, 3 10s in a row, and now you're gonna have to see what happens next week.
Well, no, and it's like I was saying, I was like, yes, I think my especially for this, you know, not Walking Dead or anything else, it's just like, oh yeah, this is my ratings are basically starting to come up like based on emotions. And so it was like, yeah, in the beginning, I was just like, ah, gosh, like, no, like, I'm not like, this is, does not seem very good. And it's just like when something clicks and it's like, it clicked. And I was just like, I'm giving it a 10 because I'm like, I've never enjoyed myself so much. Like, I'm literally sitting at my desk and my husband's behind me doing his own thing on Twitter, like whatever this hell he does, just all like, what are you doing? He's like, what are you doing? Like, I'm watching my episode, got my headphones on, this and that, and I'm like laughing out loud, and he's just like, what's so funny, bro? Shut up. I'm like rewinding, and I'm like, I like just enjoyed so much these last couple episodes. I was like, I never thought that that's what I was going to experience. And like, that's where it was going. And I just have to say, I'm like, well done, Lower Decks. I'm like, this was not in my wheelhouse. I was not a big fan of cartoons and like, you know, like just looking at it in this kind of way. And oh, I have to say, I'm like, I've been pleasantly surprised, and I hope to God they stick the landing.
Yeah.
I'm like, so bad.
I do too. I mean, I just, I think that the show has definitely improved as we've gone on. And, I think it's, if it makes, it go, you know, if it keeps going like this, I think season two is going to be fantastic. So
I want them to make me like laugh at whatever in the last episode, but I also want like to like, and maybe I'm just asking too much, but I'm like, I don't know how many times I've cried at certain episodes of Star Trek, if all the series and seasons and like everything. It's just like, if I get a tear in my eye for just even a moment, then I'll be like, that might be where I'm like, that's where I'm going to know. Yeah. Like, okay, they nailed it.
Yeah. Yeah. I know what you mean by that.
Yes.
Reminds me, it's like, well, LT, I know you've only seen parts of Deep Space Nine, but the episode The Visitor, that's one that makes me cry every time. And of course, The Inner Light, that's another one.
There's so many like little, but just like having that moment where like I, like that's, every Trekkie has their moment. And so it's like, if this can pull that off, then I'll be like, it doesn't have to. I'm not saying it has to do that, but it's just like, that's one of the connections that I think all of us have with the show. It's like this one episode that makes it's like, it hits right there.
I'm just trying to think of things that haven't been mentioned. The thing about Rutherford making the rapidly repeating transporter thing, and he tells Billups it's a movie, so he can do what he wants because it's a movie.
Yeah.
I thought that was good. Borg had to create a force field. That was interesting. We see Lieutenant Jet again, which I got to go back and look at that because I only thought I saw one pip for him this time.
I think you might be correct.
Yeah, that's maybe
it was
maybe Boimler did that intentionally. I don't know, but yeah.
Well, and I think my last amusing part was at the very, very end.
Yeah,
not on Da Vinci's watch.
Oh yeah, yeah. So I guess. I guess she got programmed as a character. What else?
Well, if you're going to throw that one in, Brian, it was the looking at the photon torpedo casket with the skid mark on the ground, very much last scene of Rathacon with Spock's casket.
Right. Yes. I got a kick out of when Rutherford... This is so very programming subroutines. It's very much a product of the 90s because most of programming turned into object-oriented programming models where you don't hear the use of subroutines anymore. It's similar in concept to how objects are used, but it's subroutines are more of a procedural thing, and only a programming geek would get that. But
I know, I was like, wow, you're going deep.
Yeah. Yeah. No, but that's what they call them on NextGen. But the funny thing is that that's kind of like not a thing anymore. What else? They're either called functions or they're objects. So objects and classes and all that stuff, methods. What else? Oh, yeah, the eulogy. That was interesting. And I do also wonder what Boimler's going to do with that, whether he's going to, you know, try to use that against his advantage or what. But I mean, I do agree to a certain extent about, I think, what Wes said about Boimler and his kiss butt kind of stuff. But I don't know. That seems to be him. So I'm not really all that surprised to see Boimler like that, because that's how he's been all along.
Yeah, yeah.
You know? All right, so let's move on to our shipwide announcements. Well, one thing of note is that Paul F. Tompkins was the voice of Counselor Dr. Maglemo, or Maglemo. I don't know what it was, but it's funny. He, of course, is a co-host of Star Trek, the Pod Directive, the new podcast, official podcast of Star Trek. And he co-hosts that with the voice of Mariner, Tawny Newsome. So kind of interesting that those two are doing that. And I wanted to highlight the episode of Star Trek, the Pod Director from this week. It was a really good one. On there, joining Tawny, and actually Paul F. Tompkins wasn't on that episode, except for at the beginning and at the end, but Tawny Newsome was joined by Michelle Hurd, who of course played Raffi Musiker on Star Trek Picard. Well, plays, not played. Angelica Jade Bastine, who is a staff writer at Vulture. And Kendra James, managing editor at StarTrek.com. So they talk about everything from Michael Burnham's braids in season 3 to what Star Trek may look like under the Federation for, you know, Black people and other people of color. It's a really good episode and really enlightening, and how much Star Trek meant to these Black women growing up is quite an interesting discussion to hear. Like, some of them, you know, that was the only TV they were allowed to watch during you know, when they were kids. So I thought that was just a great story. Thanks to Wes, as we go into news, for collecting, Wes from Minnesota, for collecting these. Something I haven't been able to do much on this show, talk about ratings. So, you know, those of you that, get back to the Walk the Talk Through, where I talk about ratings all the time. So there was an article from TV Line saying that Star Trek Discovery's ratings for last week, which we didn't mention on the episode, were a less than stellar debut. I mean, I don't know. To me, that was kind of a negative thing, because any ratings that they get are good, because they had to pay zero for the show. You know, it was just sitting on their shelf, basically. So this fills the schedule, and they can also, you know, promote the CBS All Access and season 3 of Discovery. So to me, I think it's good no matter what, but it actually improved in the ratings this week, depending on which indicator you use. But it was behind last week when the premiere, because of like Family Feud, and I think Match Game was on against it. So it came in third between Match Game and Dateline, and it was the same this week. But its ratings did improve in the coveted 18 to 49 demographic. So last week it got a 0.2. in 1849 with 1.702 million viewers. And this week it got a 0.3 in the 1849, which basically means that more 1849 people watched it, but it was slightly under in the total viewers with 1.679 billion viewers. One other thing we missed from last week that I wanted to include is that Star Trek Discovery season 4 is actually shooting. So there hasn't been a formal declaration that the series has been renewed, but supposedly we've heard credible reports that season 4 is already shooting in Toronto. So we have several different stories about that. So that's good to know. Not surprised. The show is basically the flagship of CBS All Access, and it will be as well for Paramount Plus when it becomes that. For those of you in Europe, you should know that Destination Star Trek London has been delayed again due to COVID-19. It has been postponed until November 2021. Not a good year for conventions, that's for sure. No. You know, Zachary Quinto was on the Talk, which is a CBS, you know, daytime show. He says that the Kelvin cast is still willing to board the Enterprise again for another film. So, but about that though, Noah Hawley's idea for his Star Trek film, he wants to do a Trek film that doesn't rely on action, and supposedly it will be an all new cast and crew. So it won't even be a crew that we know. So it's, I don't know what era it would be in or whatever, but supposedly it wasn't going to be in with Kirk and Spock and McCoy. So, and it doesn't sound like it's going to be Picard either. So I don't know.
It's a Star Trek world beyond.
I guess. The last thing to mention is that Star Trek Picard season 1 comes out on DVD, Blu-ray, and Steelbook this coming week, October 6th. So if you haven't had a chance to watch Picard, if you've been waiting for the DVD or Blu-ray to come out, you won't have to wait much longer. It will be out on the 6th of October, which is actually my wife's birthday, but she would not be happy if I bought that for a gift. And on there, there's some interesting segments that are going to be on there. There are featurettes about each episode, behind the scenes featurettes for each of the 10 episodes. There's a Make It So, the co-creator and Patrick Stewart discuss the iconic character back on the screen. There is a segment on the XBs, the, you know, X-Borgs. Let's see. Set Me Up. Production designer Todd Cherniowski serves as a tour guide for the main stages of Star Trek Picard. That would be interesting. It is finally on a something, because I know when they released the short tracks, they did not include Children of Mars, but it is on this DVD. So I know in Europe, for example, they haven't had access to the short tracks yet, except if they bought Blu-ray, but they didn't have Children of Mars. Well, Children of Mars is amazing. I gave that a 10 when it came out, and it's sort of a prequel to what we see in Star Trek Picard. And it, anyway, it's great. I love that short track. There's also some exclusives on there. There is a commentary for the first episode, Remembrance, including Alex Kurtzman, Akiva Goldsman, and Michael Chabon, as well as Kirsten Beyer, supervising producer, and director Hanley M. Culpepper. So basically the four creators and the director. And there is an exclusive called The Motley Crew, working outside of Starfleet, Picard gathers his crew from across the galaxy. This special feature takes a look at the actors and characters that will travel aboard the La Serena. And if Ruthie was here, she would complain about the fact that it's the there. which it is true.
Yeah.
There is another exclusive Picard props. So property master Jeffrey Lombardi takes fans on a tour of the many props created for season one of Picard. That sounds great. I love those. Another commentary for the Children of Mars. So it is Alex Kurtzman and Jenny Lumet and Kristen Beyer, who they were the three co-writers of it. And that's, you know, a short, so it's not a very long thing, but there is a commentary for that. There is also exclusive deleted scenes and a gag reel. So all great. So you'll be able to get that October 6th. So that is it for our news this week. So Kyle, why don't you tell people how to contact us?
All right. To submit your feedback or to connect with us, go to talktheroommedia.com/feedback, where you can submit text or audio. You can also call 216-232-6146. Email us at lowerdecks@talktheroommedia.com. And also post in our designated episode thread in our Facebook group. And you can find that at facebook.com/groups/StarTrekTTMpodcasts. The deadline for season one, episode 10, will be on a regular day and time, Friday, October 9th, 2020, at 7 p.m. Eastern, 6 p.m. Central. A good way to support us is you can find us at Twitter at StarTrekTTM. A great way you can also support us is share us on Twitter and Facebook, which is a very, very good deal. You can go to facebook.com/talktheroommedia and you can write a review. Share us on Facebook and retweet us on Twitter, especially when we post the new episode out. Subscribe to us in Apple Podcasts or the podcast client of your choice. And while you're there, give us a rating or a review.
And another good way to support us is through Patreon. We just released, actually today, the episode that was recorded on Sunday, which actually all three of us were on. So, and we also had Ruthie, of course, and Kim from the Revenge Deep Space Nine. So we want to thank our supporters, Clint McCollum, LT. Thank you very much for being a longtime patron of ours. Yep. James Robbins, Fred Petrie, this guy over there, Kyle McAdams, Kim Vogley, Brian Shiro, Christoph Leitner, Lee Radke, Aaron Mays, Michael Carrier, Stephen Chambers, Kevin Lyle, and Jeff Gentry. Should mention all of our new episodes are on YouTube. Just search for the Talk Through Media channel. And remember to subscribe to us. Click the bell to get notified when we have new videos. That's where our episodes go out first because of our little production routine. When it creates the files for the podcast, it creates a video, which is basically an audio with a cover on it, that goes out to YouTube, and it goes straight into YouTube. So that's why it goes out first. But anyway, that's why we say that. We also mentioned this before, but again, just a reminder, if you are listening to this through the Picard cast feed and you want to watch Discovery, switch over to the Star Trek Discovery podcast feed, and then you'll get all of the, you know, you'll get Picard, you'll get Lower Decks, and you'll get Discovery. So, and then of course, you can also choose the Talk Through Media all-inclusive feed, which gets you all those things, Rebinge Deep Space Nine, the returning Walking Dead Talk Through, and the not returning Let's Talk Through. So, and we did release an episode of the Walking Dead Talk Through last week, but we are also getting back to, we have both the finale of season 10 of The Walking Dead on Sunday. And you can actually, if you have AMC Premiere, you can actually watch it now as of Friday night. I think it was available Thursday. But also the premiere of the new show, Walking Dead World Beyond, which we're not actually going to cover directly, although we may have segments. So we were talking about that before we started recording tonight. Our next episode for this show is season one, episode 10. We don't know who has written it, who has directed it, what the description is, or what the title is for that matter. But until then, Until next time, I'm Brian.
And I'm Kyle.
And I'm LT.
Peace and long life.
Live long and prosper.